preparing for this morning, I realized that this is probably the last time I'm going to speak in a church. I'm now 69 years old as of yesterday. Thank you. And my friends in the church community, they're retiring, and the pulpit will go to other people, younger people, less deserving people. And I feel badly because I love coming to church. I grew up in a large Jewish community in the Boston suburb. We had six synagogues, and I had no idea. I knew that there were Catholics there. I knew about them, past their churches, and I didn't quite understand anybody else. It was sort of like that New York magazine cover from the 1970s about New York. Do you remember? There's 9th Avenue, 10th Avenue, and then the Hudson River over here, and then kind of New Jersey's way out there. And then all the way at the end, there's a little bit of China and Russia and Japan sort of in the distance. And that's what the Christian world was like for me. I had no idea who was who and what was what and what I could learn and how it all laid out. And then I came to Birmingham, Alabama. And I was overwhelmed by Christians and by churches, and I quickly learned the difference between this one and that one and you and others, and I have been blessed, and we're not going to look at the words I wrote, to appreciate the artistry of your faith and the nobility of your traditions. You and especially your pastor at Hurley made Christianity a living faith to me. Not my faith, but it's a living faith to me. I am enriched to know you and appreciate your ministry, your community, and your faith. And as I sail off into my sunset years, I take with me the lessons and love that I have received from Christians like you. So my first point of order this morning is to thank Dr. Hurley and Gail and all you alls, as we say, up north, and thank you for being wonderful neighbors and wonderful teachers and wonderful friends. I have a unique history with your pastor that I want to share. 12 years ago, we were riding in a van together through the mountains of northern India, six pastors and one rabbi. Pastor Hurley never shies away from an adventure. And we were seeking out the way that other religious faiths experience their spiritual lives. And the area was beyond beautiful. Towering mountains and green forests and winding roads. And our driver, an Indian fellow, was driving like a madman. But we figured he knew what he was doing because he's a professional. But we sat with our hearts in our mouths. And then suddenly, upon a turn, we came face to face with a passenger bus and collided head on. Our van was totaled. We were banged up, and the seat belts saved our lives. That's not an exaggeration. After our near-death experience, the six pastors and one rabbi were badly shaken up. None of us had ever felt so close to death as we did at that perilous moment. And at dinner that night, the Christian faith leaders and the solo rabbi were trying to come to terms with what had happened to us. The pastors were discussing how sorry they felt for their driver. Can they forgive him for his transgression? How will he make a living? What if he has a family? They looked on him with great charity. The one rabbi said, "Forgive him? Have you lost your minds? Let him find another job where he's not in danger to himself or other people. It should take away his driver's license and he should never get behind the wheel again." That's the difference between religious faiths. The pastors were worried about the driver's soul. The rabbi's first concern was, "Don't die." So I've thought a lot about that moment, and I experience it like a head-on collision with a bus in the Himalayas. are the crucibles which test faith and refine souls. We do not emerge from them the same. As much as faith teaches us about life, life instructs us about faith. And everyone who is privileged to live with my vintage faces tests. Can't avoid them. I'm not sure that ultimately we would want to. Tests which refine us as human beings so that when we do die, we will have truly lived. Let me offer a gentle critique of bumper sticker Christianity. That's not here in this church, but bumper sticker Christianity. When I first came to Birmingham 3 decades ago, every third Chrysler minivan, blue, silver, you know, had the bumper sticker with the cross and the words, three words. What, remember the three words? I found it. Remember that period of time? The cross and I found it. And the snarky among us wanted to respond with a bumper sticker of our own, which we never did. We would have been smart. It said, I never lost it. The I found it bumper sticker is not what Christian faith is about, or any living faith that walks among human beings. See, a living faith is complex. It breathes, it grows, it animates. It is not a static moment in time, or an achievement, or an experience to be filed away as a ride on Disney's Space Mountain. Did it, done that, what's next? People say, I have found faith, I so declare. And they say, I declare that God is my Savior and protector, my rock in whom I trust. They say, I do declare that God is my fortress and my salvation. My friends, I do not believe that these slogans refer to a living faith, but rather to a static moment in time. Faith is more than the rewards and the protection and the fortress. So I'm going to tell you, in my experience, the meaning of faith. It's a conversation. Faith is wrestling through the night. Faith is crying out. Faith is hope and despair combined in one strong and fragile thread. Faith is the embrace between two lovers who come together but cannot always stay intertwined but still long for each other and never forget each other even when they are apart. Faith is a two-way street. It breathes. Faith is the inhale and the exhale of our soul force and the soul force of the universe all combined in one. Like the sun above, faith animates. It cannot be seen or felt during dark nights and cloudy days, but faith is the sunshine, even when the sun does not shine upon us. I retired from the active pulpit at just the right time. I avoided the COVID pandemic, the uncertainty and pain brought to church and synagogues. I did not have to bury people who died from COVID. You did. Stand at the graveside with a congregation devoid of mourners. You did. Stand 6 feet away from grieving survivors without being able to offer a kind touch or a hug. I did not have to master Zoom or teach or preach to a computer monitor. So kudos to all the rabbis and pastors and priests and who offered spiritual comfort to a suffering world from afar without the joys of human connection. We suffered then, all of us did. And we are still trying to absorb the experience of our lost years and shake off the loneliness and desperation that COVID wrought. Go back and visit those years in your own mind. You say, oh my God, what did we go through? I wish that I could proclaim the end of suffering. I am here to tell you that to be human is to endure suffering. in some moments in history and some moments in our personal lives are filled with suffering. And there are other happier moments, gentler moments, are filled with grace and joy and love. And these moments come as surely as the pain and sadness and tears. Solomon taught, there's a time for every season under heaven. Some of us think that the faithful live with unbridled joy every moment of life. But that is not the case with our own lives. We have seasons of joy and seasons of sadness, seasons of pain and seasons of delight, seasons of hope and seasons of despair, and all speak the language of faith. Look, King David wrote in the book of Psalms, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? In the words of my groaning, oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night I find no rest. You are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel, and you, our fathers, trusted. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried and were rescued. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. Be not far from me, wrote King David, for trouble is near, and there is none to help. I'm going to get personal with you. The past year in 2022 was my year of hell on earth. I endured 4 surgeries on my back and spinal cord. I traveled to New York for these surgeries. They were complicated, big ones, far away from home. I now have a new neck, a straight spine, enough metal in my back to take up a shelf at Home Depot. By my calculation, I have spent in total probably 25 hours open on the operating table and then confined for many months to my couch at home, barely able to move or take care of myself. My son-in-law joked, they should have put a zipper in my back. It would have made things a lot easier. I didn't laugh. And I had to endure pain. I am still not whole, but physically I am standing and moving forward slowly and carefully, but moving forward in the right direction. My life has been renewed. And I'm here with you. Something I could not have anticipated half a year ago. Some of you have endured periods in your lives like I endured in 2022, and I'm sorry for what you have gone through. My heart has opened up with empathy for all who suffer. Kids tease each other on the playgrounds by responding to insult and injury by saying, it takes one to no one. It takes one to no one. Truer words have never been spoken. In large measure, I know what others go through, and others know what I have had to endure. So, what happened to my faith during this terrible ordeal? I'll tell you bluntly. God and I took a vacation. We needed a break from each other. Every time they wheeled me into the operating room, I prayed for the nurses. I shake when I think of this. And the surgeons and the anesthesiologists that they would be successful and God would guide their hands, keep them alert and skillful so that I could walk again and might come alive once again. But I did not pray for me. I never said to God, why me? There was no because that would have satisfied. I simply had a crooked, misshapen spine that needed to be corrected so I could live again. And I was blessed to have a medical team who were able to fix it. My spiritual response to my afflictions wasn't why me, but more, for now, leave me alone. I need a break. God, you need a break for me too. We're just not in a good place right now. Now, my dear wife Judy, some of you may know her, was characteristically wonderful, mostly patient. She took care of me for months when I couldn't take care of myself. I will tell you, from Judy, I learned the depth of love. While God and I needed a break from each other, a time out, Judy and God grew closer. We each had it tough in different ways. Judy's belief and dependence on God was strengthened. I felt like a slow-motion Job. And like Job, I needed a time out. On a happy note, this summer my wife and I celebrated 48 years of marriage. Come on, say Mazel Tov. When I look back over the 17,530 days of marriage, partnership, sharing, and love, I would guess that 17,400 of them were really great. But let me guess, 130 of them, probably by estimation, I don't have a tally, were probably fairly lousy. Every marriage has its challenges. And overcoming the challenges and sticking with each other is the greatest measure of love and devotion, the cement that keeps a marriage together, vibrant and growing. I would not have chosen a different wife. I am grateful for the wife I have today and for the vast majority of the 17,530 days that we have been together. Look, I remember back to the day in 1975 when we married. We were young, young, and filled with hope and passion and joy. Nothing could ever go wrong. Marriage is not like that. Things go wrong. People disappoint us, and we disappoint them. But what makes a marriage strong is that every couple has made a vow. They will stick it out. They will endure the 130 unpleasant days for the 17,400 good days. No, they will endure the 130 unpleasant days because they believe in the future and want the future to be good. They will endure the 130 rotten days because they made a promise to each other and they keep their promises. So my friends, to some measure, we have all had tough times of late. Some of us have walked through the valley of the shadow of death, where illness has struck us, or if not illness itself, then fear for ourselves. If not fear for ourselves, then for our family and friends. Not for our family and friends, and for our churches and synagogues. And if not fear for our synagogues and churches, then fear for our relationship with God. But faith is a living stone. It's not something that we find one day and expect it to be the same as it was on the day we found it. No, faith is like a marriage. It grows, it endures, it promises, it fails, and it comes alive again. Faith can take a vacation, but the believer will always believe. The psalmist declared that sometimes God hides God's face from us. That's true. We know it. And sometimes we hide our face from God, and that is true too. But we are always looking for each other, hoping to find each other. And even when we take a vacation from each other, good God, we come home again. Come home again through the doors, because where else? Where else can we be? I'm going to conclude by taking a preacher's minute. I learned this also from Pastor Hurley. Just a little extra. So many times people, especially Christians, ask questions like these. Do you believe in God? Or how can you believe in God when bad things happen? It is like asking, can I still love my wife when over 48 years 130 of our days with each other were disappointing. And then I had a realization in reflecting the stage of my life. I realized that I was asking the wrong question. Now, the question is not, can I still love her when we are not in a happy moment? That's the wrong question. The right question is, can she still love me when I disappoint her, when I fall short? If I can live in such a way that my wife of 48 years, who has loved me for 17,400 days, but on 130 other days she has wondered, what am I going to do with that man? If I can turn around and become again the kind of man who is kind and forgiving and considerate and caring, the man she hoped to have spent her life with, then I will have reclaimed my marriage, and the sun will peek through the clouds, and we will kiss and make up and give each other chocolate and roses. You see, it takes a willingness to stick it out, to remember back to the days of our youth and to look forward to better days ahead, to affirm and reaffirm the love that two people have with each other. And the same is true with our faith in God. The silliest question a person can ask of me is, do you believe in God? It's like asking, do you have a happy marriage? The best answer, truest answer is, usually. Most often. I believe in God most of the time. Finding it, remember the bumper sticker? Finding it is not the issue. Keeping it is the challenge. I believe in God. That really is not very important in the big scheme of the universe. The real question before us in church this morning, in the synagogue yesterday, or every morning when we rise from our slumber, the crucial question laid before us is not whether we can believe in God, but whether God can believe in us. Can we be worthy of our blessings and be stalwart in our commitments, even on those days when we desire a vacation from each other? 2,609 years ago, my ancestors were carried off in chains to Babylon, never again to dwell in their homeland or worship at God's holy temple. And then a scant 50 years later, their children returned to Zion, rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem, established God's sanctuary on the same hilltop upon which the first temple was demolished and lay in ruin. The place of joy became the place of defeat, became the place of joy once again. The stones that were alive had died, and now, a half century later, those stones came alive once again. I'll conclude with these sentiments. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes in the morning. We have dark nights, all of us do, and we are still alive to witness the dawn of each new day. That is a blessing. Those who sow in tears, all of us have cried out with anguish and pain, will reap in joy, for we are alive today, living all once again. The psalmist sang out God's promise, those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Let's conclude together. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. Amen.